Welcome to the Skip to the End podcast. This is yet another special MCM Comic-Con podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Mark.
This past weekend, we were lucky enough to go to the MCM Comic-Con in Birmingham. It was a great event. There were some really cool guests, some interesting panels, a lot of brilliant, brilliant cosplay costumes. A lot of fun, wasn't it, guys?
Oh, it was a lot of fun. Great fun.
It was unbelievable.
And so we've got a lot of cool content for you. First up, one of the major attractions at the con this year was a panel with a lot of the stars of The Walking Dead. It was a panel featuring Christian Serratos, who plays Rosita, Tyler James Williams, who plays Noah, and, of course, Laurie Holden, who plays Andrea. And we got the chance to speak to Tyler and to Christian after their panel. I want to jump in at the deep end here.
Okay.
The most recent episode of the show, massive spoiler alert here, your character, Tyler, of Noah,
yes,
experienced one of the most gruesome, vivid TV deaths I've ever seen.
Yeah.
How was that to work on?
It was interesting, you know. We wanted to make sure that it was something, you know, kind of brutal for Glenn's trajectory and where he's going, and, you know, for him to have seen that, you know, it'll really serve as some of the things happening with his character later. So we just wanted to make that as, you know, good and vivid and, you know, specific as possible so the audience can connect to that with him. You know, it's one of the few times that we actually get a chance to really see what happens, you know, when somebody gets, you know, torn apart. And I think it's necessary for the audience to connect to that when a character sees it.
And, Christian, your character of Rosita, we've still got two episodes left in the season, so obviously, there's only so much you can say, but is there a lot more to come from your character in the story?
Yeah, there's a lot more to come in general. I think that's what's cool about the show, is that it always leaves people guessing, and you never know what's going to happen. So the finale is going to be interesting. I've heard a lot of people have their different theories today, and it's really fun to hear. But I guess, yeah, people are just going to have to tune in and watch and see what kind of craziness goes down for the finale, because it's going to be crazy.
And that's one of the good things about the show, like you said, does keep you guessing. I think in the same episode as Noah's unfortunate demise, we actually see a bit of character development as well. And it's a really unfortunate thing, because I think the audience are growing quite attached to you, Tyler. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, that's what this show does well. It makes sure you fall in love with people right before they cut you off. But yeah, I think that's just kind of what's necessary for the story to move forward. You know, I think just killing people left and right doesn't really do anything. But if you have audiences that fall in love with the characters in the same way the characters fall in love with each other, then, you know, that's what keeps it moving along.
And when you signed up for the show, did you know your character had a limited run on the series?
I didn't know for sure. I figured he did. Mainly because of, you know, the way some of the scripts were just kind of turning out. I figured that's, you know, kind of the way it would happen, and I'd said it from the beginning. So, yeah, I think, you know, for me, I was just trying to service whatever storylines needed to be serviced the best that I could and, you know, be an actor for hire and get in and get out.
When you guys got the part for Walking Dead, was there anything that you took inspiration from? Was there any famous zombie films or anything that you watched to try and get some experience or some idea of how you're going to be your character?
I think my research just came from the comic book. I just, you know, researched who she was from the comic books, knowing full well that I wasn't going to get through reading all of them before I started filming. And then I just, you know, went online and saw what the fans loved about her and tried to emulate that as best as I could. And now I'm just trying to maintain it.
What about yourself?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. My character's not in the comic at all. So mine was just, you know, dealing with the references of, you know, what happens when somebody, kind of like, we start off in the hospital. So just going through, like, you know, what happens when people are isolated and that type of thing, you know, a lot of hostage, situations, there were several different experiments that I was kind of looking up, the Princeton experiment, in which people just kind of, you know, had these, like, wards in these, in the cops, and, you know, how that dynamic played into the way their mind worked a bit. So it wasn't as much, you know, the horror aspect. I think it was mainly just the psychology of what it does to a human mind over time.
And how have you guys found the reaction of the fans over here in the UK?
It's been interesting. It's been good. You know, I mean, I was saying before in another interview that it's difficult to judge international numbers and international press and all of that. So it's good to actually see it firsthand. You know, I think we see it stateside, and we completely understand it there, but here it's a little different.
And you were a big part of the Twilight series of films, so I imagine you've had to deal with severe fandom in the past. Did you attend cons as part of the Twilight team?
Oh yeah, I think most of the cons I've attended have been Twilight cons, so it was kind of nice for me having something to base it off of. I was coming into a already established project, The Walking Dead, and and I was very nervous about it, but I understood that it had the same sort of fandom that Twilight did, so I wasn't as nervous knowing how that went, how the secrecy was, and how the fans were, so it was nice having that as preparation.
And you've both been around acting for a long time, despite your relatively young age. So how did you get involved in it?
I grew up in Los Angeles, so it's just kind of an inevitable
thing
for me. My dad worked for the studios, and my mom was, you know, a young single mother, so she did extra work to get us by in modeling. So I thought it would be fun to try modeling. I was scouted and signed with a modeling agency for a while, and they kind of forced me into acting, and I found out later that I ended up loving it, and so I dumped them and I kept acting.
I came out of New York, somewhat of a theater kid for a while. Just kind of fell into it, honestly. We knew a woman at our church who was doing a play, and she was like, yeah, no, you should just come and read. She was trying to cast. And from there, I was kind of like bit by the bug and just like kind of working in New York for a long period of time until I eventually had to, you know, move out to L.A. for another show. And, you know, I've been kind of at it ever since.
Of course, you got your big break in Everybody Hates Chris,
yeah,
which was a great show. I imagine that must have been a great show to watch.
Yeah, no, it was a cool one. You know, it was a really good, good learning ground, you know, great group of people in which, you know, you kind of learn how to carry a series in that way, and you know, kind of just play your role, and that's, you know, what it just led to other things. As far as application wise, like stuff like this now.
So it was really, really nice to meet those guys, and you could tell how tired they were. I think they'd flown in that morning; they were jet lagged. So it was really cool that they were still, you know, happy and willing to talk to us guys.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you could see, obviously, talking to them that it was their kind of first experience of a UK convention.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they've been quite, they were tired, but they were quite overwhelmed by the response they'd had as well.
Yeah.
The queues themselves, because obviously they did a signing for everyone that attended the con, was insane. Like, yeah. Hours and hours. And fair play to them, they stayed until everyone had a signature or a photo. And they were so grateful for the British crowd. And I think it must be great for them to do that massive flight, like you said, arrive here and just get such a warm response from everyone, because everyone I spoke to was there for Walking Dead.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And the guys have been involved in projects before. Like we mentioned in the interview, Christian was a part of the Twilight franchise, and Tyler was part of Everybody Hates Chris. But The Walking Dead is such a cultural phenomenon at the minute, on both sides of the pond. You know, it's a huge, huge show. And I think they sort of appreciate how lucky they are, and that's why they're so good to the fans.
Yeah, I mean, the funniest part was when you started the interview and you went straight in with the talking about, obviously, the horrific death.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's the booking and they knew that much, but you couldn't got a better booking. The week after the most gruesome death we've seen, he's in front of us.
Yeah.
I don't know. Did MCM know that? Because these spoilers don't get out there, but that's a perfect booking.
Yeah. And the thing is, this episode is going out on a Friday and we're recording it on a Monday before we've seen the episode after. So touch wood that Christian's still alive. Who knows with that show?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they have a penance for killing off characters as soon as possible, really. Yeah.
Nobody is safe.
Just as you get to know them. One of the guests that I was really excited to see this year was Quentin Flynn. Now, I know you guys may not have heard of him a lot before, but growing up, you guys know I'm a massive gamer.
Yeah.
So I spent a lot of time on Metal Gear Solid 2 and Kingdom Hearts, things like that as a kid. And he actually voices a couple of characters in Kingdom Hearts. He's also done a few voices for other franchises as well, like Con in Bleach as well, which I'm a big fan of. But he was Raiden in Metal Gear Solid 2, who's the sort of the main character of that game. So I was really excited to speak to him. So here's what he had to say. How did you get into voice acting?
That's a fantastic question. Well, I started acting as a kid, and actually before I hit the stage as a little boy, I used to do impressions of impressionists' impressions.
Okay.
Watching TV. What does he say? The telly. And yeah, right, so that's the thing, is I was watching like these impressionists like Rich Little and Frank Gorsh and Fred Travellini and John Byner, right? A couple Canadians, a couple Americans, and they're doing their impressions, so I thought I'd do the same thing. So I started doing what I'm doing now. Like, who the f*** is this? I don't know. He sounds like he might be regional. And so, yeah, as a little boy, as young as 8, my friend Billy Russ and I who's now called Bill Russ because he's a man, would go into his parents' basement and we just draw lists of these impressions and start doing them. Mm-hmm. You know, just made sense at the time. It's like listening to music or playing ball. And back then, you know, we were mad Beatles fans. So one of the first impressions I did was Sir Paul McCartney. You know, back before he was a sir. That's it. Good stuff. Mind yourself. Go veggie. And there was an American talk show host named Johnny Carson. So we did Johnny Carson back in the day. Is that, hello, oh, breaker, breaker. Somebody's in. Is it the cops? I don't know. Did you hear that? The amazing sound effects in the studio. It makes it sound like there are real, genuine here. And so, and then, gosh, you know, it was just one after the other, and then we do, you know, like you do, you know, just taking the out of your friends, you know, behind their backs, of course. doing, you know, this one, you know, hey, hey. And he comes around, hey, what's up? Oh, nothing. I thought I heard my name. No, you didn't hear a thing. You know, in high school, I said, let's do the plays. My older brother Dan does the plays, and they're really great fun. I said, I'm kind of nervous. He goes, well, there's girls. I said, that sounds great. So that's what we did, and I got in, and as a freshman in high school, you know, and so for the next 4 years, I just, it fits. So my cousin Franklin was in my band in Cleveland, and he wanted to move to Los Angeles to become a rock star. We got out there, and sure enough, I knew this is the place I had to be. I met an actor named Andrew Stevens, who had been in a series in America called Dynasty. And he said to me, Quentin, there's no shortcut, there's no simple answer except this. If this is what you want to do, save some money and or get a job and try Los Angeles or New York for at least a year, see what you think, and make a decision then. And so, you know, I wasn't there even a year, just a few months, and I knew, okay, this is what I got to do. So I just stayed and did everything you could, one step at a time.
So how did you fall in specifically to voice acting?
Oh, good. Here we go. Okay. So I had taken a voiceover commercial workshop after college, and then I took another one because I didn't know there was this business of voice acting. And so after taking these courses, when I moved to Los Angeles, there was an animation voiceover workshop, and there was a teacher named Bob Bergen, who's actually the voice of Porky Pig, has been for years. He taught me at the time, and he said, you know, you've really got a knack. So a number of months later, I'm doing theater, I'm in a rock band, I'm doing extra work for TV and film. My girlfriend says, what are you doing? She's like, focus, pick one thing. And she said, you did so well with that animation class, and you're so adept at voices, why don't you do that? So what I did was I saved some money, made a professional voiceover demo with a producer who was also a casting director. She gave me a letter of referral, and like the movies, I went and knocked on 15 doors in Hollywood, giving them my demo tape that we produced, hoping to get it signed, you know, get signed with an agent. And I was lucky enough that I met a woman who liked me, heard something in the tape, and asked if I would sign with them. And as I say, it only takes one to start. So that's where I started. And within a few years, I started booking. But it took a few years, yeah. You know, I did some commercial stuff. My first cartoon, I guested on Aladdin as a prince. Prince God knows what. And then it was Flame On, the Human Torch, and the Fantastic Four. Nice. And Hakuna Matata, what a wonderful phrase. Who is that? Quentin Flynn doing Nathan Lane as Timon? Why, I'm the original. No, you're the original. Who's the original? God knows. And then Johnny Quest and the Adventures of Johnny Quest. Come on, Dad, we gotta go find Bandit. So we did that in 96. That was a reboot of the 66 series. And, you know, it grew from there.
Was the stuff that you watched when you were growing up that you remember that voice that you thought, that's why I want to do this?
Well, Spider-Man.
Yeah?
Yeah, there were reruns of the 1960s Spider-Man series when I was a little boy, and I loved that. I loved the comic book, you know, Marvel Comics. Spider-Man was my favorite character. As a little boy, you know, in the hot summers in Ohio, I'd get in the door jamb with my bare feet, and they were kind of tacky from sweat, and start to kind of climb with my hands and my back against the inside of the door jamb, and I'd get to the ceiling, you know, I thought, I'm Spider-Man. Look at Dad, I'm doing it. You know, the only problem is the webs wouldn't come out of my hands, so I would hit the earth, and it would hurt. But so that was a dream, you know, and Johnny Quest too, you know, the same thing. The reruns were when I was a kid. And little did I know, though, that all these years later, you know, once I got into the industry, I would end up not only doing voice acting, but do these two roles.
Yeah.
I got to play Spidey in Marvel's Ultimate Alliance. But yeah, that actor, and I don't know his name, it was keen for me. I thought, there's something about that. And the music. And the production, it was really, at the time, you know, even if you listen to the music now for that series, it was incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just, something, there was something so cool about the guy who played Spider-Man. He had the sarcasm down, he had the wit, which I can say unequivocally that in the majority of the Spider-Man cartoons since the 60s, and even in the live action, what's missing to me is that wit and sarcasm and edge to Spider-Man that's so necessary. Yeah, we know Peter Parker is you know, he's kind of a straight, you know, but they've made him out to be kind of a wimp and a nerd, and then the Spidey lines don't come out as, you know, hip to me. Mm. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, obviously you've done a lot of animated feature work, like you've mentioned Aladdin, Spider-Man, Johnny Quest. You made the jump into the video game industry. Now, the video game industry has just blown up over the last sort of 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
So was that an avenue that you hadn't really considered back in the 90s? And then, obviously, when the PlayStation 2 came out, that widened Metal Gear Solid, is Metal Gear Solid 2, Metal Gear Solid Rising, was something you jumped into. I mean, how did you get that part? How did you make that transition to video games?
It's an interesting question, because you're right. That did not exist when I started. For Raiden, I had worked with a director named Chris Zimmerman, and she directed me in The Adventures of Johnny Quest. Mm. It just turned out that she was auditioning and casting the role for Raiden for the Metal Gear series, and she told me what they wanted, and, you know, she directed me as she does, and I just got it. And I didn't know about the first Metal Gear, right? I didn't know anything about the game. This was all new to me. So I went in, and the acting was similar to animation. Sometimes it would be a little more real, a little more authentic and genuine, not as elevated or heightened, very dramatic at times, as you guys know. So that part wasn't difficult because of my acting background. Acting is acting is acting. But at the time, we did have to chase some visual images of time code that was so strange. Since that time, that's gone by the way of the dodo bird, and, you know, that's not unnecessary. But the rest of it was just, it's acting, you know, and adapting and taking direction and giving the best performance you can.
So, very funny interview, guys.
Oh, hilarious.
I mean, you probably didn't hear, we didn't record a lot of the stuff that he was saying, so it was on the way to the press room as well, but the guy was just drop-dead funny.
Yeah, I think in another life he could have been a stand-up comedian, and I had no idea we were going to be given all those kind of impressions, and the Paul McCartney impression was superb.
Yeah, it was absolutely superb, and I was excited to meet this guy, but I knew nothing about him, so I know, obviously, Adam, you're the game out of us, and you were telling us all about how, you know, you're excited to actually meet this guy, and you've played a number of games that he's been on, but I knew nothing about this guy, so I was going in there completely blind, and like you said, I felt we went to a free stand-up show because I was sitting there laughing for most of it. I've had to probably cut half of us out, you know, laughing out loud. But he was hilarious. And I think probably in the 6 months we've been doing these podcasts, he's been one of the most pleasure to interview, because I was just, it was amazing. I'd have paid a tenner to carry on listening to him. He was hilarious.
Yeah, he was very, very funny. One of the things I liked is that we got sort of a bit of his backstory. He told us about his life and how he got into the business, and we don't, because of the short amount of time we get to interview people, we don't always get that. So it was nice to get that deep background on him.
Yeah, yeah. I was quite upset that we had to kind of, I guess, leave it where we did, because I could have happily listened to him for hours.
Yeah, me too.
What a nice guy.
Yeah.
We've also got a really cool prize from him. Yep, he gave us a signed photo. What else could you ask for?
So the signed photo we've actually got is one of the characters that he plays in Kingdom Hearts. It's specifically the character he voices in Kingdom Hearts 2. So if you can tell us, what character does Quentin Flynn voice in Kingdom Hearts 2? That prize could be yours.
Yeah, and we will put a picture of that, the signed photo, up online. And then if you tweet us at STTE Podcast with your answer, or you can email us at podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk. Or you can Facebook us. What's our Facebook address, Mark?
Facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast.
There's no excuse. There's plenty of ways to get in touch with us.
Enter.
We were also very lucky to get hold of two of the major stars from the TV series Sleepy Hollow. We got to speak to Tom Myson and Neil Jackson.
So here with Tom, the star of Sleepy Hollow.
Hello.
So thanks a lot for joining us, Tom.
It's a pleasure.
How are you finding the convention so far?
Good, good. We've just started. It's my first English convention. The show took us to San Diego Comic Con a couple of times in New York, but it's nice to finally do a home one.
Mm. Of course, yeah. And how are you finding the British fans compared to the American fans?
You know, where it seems wherever you go, there's just the nice thing about conventions, it seems to be anywhere in the world, is it's just a friendly place. Yeah. It's a place where people go because they like something and they want to show off how much they appreciate something. So it's good. It's good to come back.
Of course, yeah. And the show, of course, has been renewed for season 3 in America, so that's great news.
Yeah, we just found out this week.
Yeah, season 3. I bet that went down very, very well.
Well, it's a relief that I'm not coming to a convention as an unemployed.
And the show's, of course, been a great success, both critically and, you know, in the ratings. People are loving the show at the minute. Were you surprised by how successful it's been?
Yeah. Yeah, if I'm honest. It's, I think from the beginning it was a tough sell. It's a show that when people hear the premise, they're kind of sceptical about.
Yeah.
And actually there have been lots of people today who I've met who have said, I wasn't sure, but my wife made me watch it, and now I love it. So, yeah, it's good to see that people come on board expecting something that they'll dislike and then being swayed.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So now we've got him.
So how did you get involved in the project?
I put myself on tape over here, which, like, when you do that, English actors just, we all assume that when the tape is sent to America, it's put on the English pile and no one watches it. But somehow mine must have been slipped into the American pile. Because I genuinely didn't expect to hear anything from them. Plus there were, you know, when I was in the waiting room, there were lots of actors who have CVs twice as long as me, you know, and you often hear, sorry, they've gone for, quote, a name.
Yeah.
And there were lots of names in the room, and I thought, nah, this isn't going to happen, so I forgot about it. And then a week later, I got a phone call saying, can you come over to America and meet the producers? Because I was never really in a big rush to get to America. I think there are lots of English actors who, you know, run over there at the first opportunity. But I was quite enjoying the work over here.
Yeah.
And also, it's hard enough being unemployed in one continent, allowing another. So yeah, that's how it started, in kind of an unexpected way.
Yeah.
And it's been pretty unexpected ever since.
So have you relocated permanently to the States? Is it North Carolina you filmed?
We were shooting in North Carolina half of last year, half of the year before. But no, when we wrap, I fly home.
You come home.
Yeah.
And is there anything, any other projects that you've got, or does Sleepy Hollow take up all your time?
Sleepy Hollow takes a lot of time. And there are a couple of nice things for this year that I've had to say no to because of scheduling. But I'm quite happy doing this for a while. It's a part that stays interesting. There's enough variety to it that we're now about to enter our third year, and I'm not bored yet. Ask me next year. But so far, I'm really happy to keep doing this for a while.
It must be nice to be able to turn down work as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it goes against every fibre of an actor's being. So it's painful, but it's nice knowing that
it's there.
That I can afford to buy a pint of milk and pay rent.
With a lot of TV nowadays not always being extended for another season, what do you think it is about your show that captured that and has been lucky and successful enough to have a third season, when so many shows after the first or the second season, we never get the finished?
I think it allows itself to be ridiculous. There's the show does. The characters, you know, are in very real, dangerous situations. But the show itself is silly and scary. And I don't think that really gets boring, as long as the it's got its tongue in its cheek. I'm aware that there's been criticism of this second season. But the nice thing about a show like this is we can change that.
Yeah.
We can, you know, season three, we can go on any path that we like because the show allows us to. There isn't a set hard and fast rule, so it can keep surprising everyone. I suspect that's why.
Do you get much spare time to watch any TV yourself? Is there any shows out there that you're absolutely loving at the moment?
The usual. Walking Dead I'm obsessed with. Game of Thrones I can't wait. Better Call Saul I'm loving. I'm very excited they're doing a remake of Utopia. Did you see Utopia?
Yes.
Over here? Which is one of my favourite shows that I've seen in a long time. Dennis Kelly is just one of my favourite writers. And David Fincher is doing an American version, which, you know, there are occasional remakes that I'd rather they left alone.
Yeah.
But I think this is one that I think could be very cool, so I'm looking forward to that.
I think, is that the one that Gillian Flynn's writing
yes,
with him?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
That's going to be very interesting.
Yeah,
already, it
really
sounds
cool.
Good.
Yeah.
It's got a perfect mix, so it shouldn't fail.
Yeah, exactly.
Fantastic. So what have you got planned for the rest of the convention? Obviously, you've got to meet your fans, get some more signings. Is there anything else you've got planned over this weekend? Or
We've got a Q&A a bit later, and I've just done my first lap of the floor, and I've seen lots of stuff that I want to buy.
It's dangerous. Leave your bank card at home.
Well, it's the one promise I made when I came here, is that I wouldn't spend all my money, but I'm going to break that promise. And then tonight, I'm going to go and find a curry.
Well, you're in the right city for it.
So I hear.
Birmingham.
Yeah, exactly. I'll be there.
So we're here with Neil Jackson, star of TV and film, here today promoting Sleepy Hollow. So you were one of the guest stars in season two. How was that?
Yeah, it was amazing. It was one of those that I got asked by the showrunner in season one just to come along and do this part in season one to play Abraham Van Brunt. I had no idea what it was. I jumped on a plane. I got the script as I got on the plane, and I'm reading it as I'm on the plane, and I get to the last couple of pages, and I'm like, holy cow, I'm the Horseman of Death, I'm the Headless Horseman. So you find out that he's the backstory, and I thought it was just going to be that one episode. And then I got a call in February last year, and they said, we've got another season, and we've figured out a way of bringing Abraham back that will be interesting, and that he'll be in contemporary period. I was like, great, sign me up. And it was originally supposed to be four episodes, but ended up ballooning to become a huge part of season two. So yeah, it was a real joy.
Excellent. So how have you found the con so far? Have the fans of the show been quite rabid?
It's incredible. It's always humbling just meeting the people who are real fans about the show. I mean, they're so incredibly passionate about the work that you do. Because, of course, we're off on sound stages, and we're off in, you know, we're in Wilmington, North Carolina, and we're shooting this thing, and you have no contact with people who are really connecting with the show apart from on Twitter and Facebook. And then to suddenly meet people that you find out it means a lot to them, and they really love the show. It's so humbling. I love it.
And with season three being recently renewed, do you know if you're going to be involved in that in any capacity?
I have no idea, unfortunately. We haven't got to the end of season two yet in Britain, but there are some big shake-ups that happened in the end of season two, so I won't spoil about any of them. And also, I've just signed on to do Spielberg's doing a new pilot, a new TV show called Lumen, which is a huge fantasy show set in an alternate universe that's very steampunk. So I'm going to be shooting that. So it will just be a matter of if schedules align.
Of course, yeah. And when can we look to see Lumen?
Lumen won't come out until next year.
Yeah. And who's that with? What network's that?
It's going to, I don't know in Britain. It's in a network called TNT over in America. Okay. And DreamWorks produced it, with Steven Spielberg exec producing it. And Joe Johnson, who people know from all the way from designing the Millennium Falcon and most of the crafts in Star Wars, all the way through to recently Captain America and Wolfman. So yeah, phenomenal director, great team on board.
Yeah, well, that's excellent. Because you've been involved in big projects before. You were in Quantum of Solace, for example.
Yeah, which is great. Getting smashed in the face by Daniel Craig.
That's going to go on the resume, that's not
Yeah, no, exactly. I tell you, when I was a kid, I would have paid a lot of money just to be a walk-on extra in a Bond film.
Yeah.
That was just a dream for me. My era was the sort of end of the sort of beginning of the Pierce Brosnan sort of end of Roger Moore era. And if I could have just walked on as a walk-on extra and paid a ton of money, I would have done it. And then to actually be on set in Panama punching Bond in the face and swapping blows, it was a dream come true.
So was it a bit surreal then when you're actually on set doing it?
Yeah, it's one of those weird things. I mean, it's like I love my job and I get to do some incredible stuff with my job, but there's not a day that goes past that I don't go, I'm a grown adult. You know, it's just like, and this is my, it's not a day that I'm just like on Sleepy Hollow. I'm portraying a guy from the colonial period who is an ex-soldier and dandy who's lost his head and is now living 200 years in the future playing, being the horseman of death. And there's not a day that goes by that you're just going, this is my job, this is amazing, but it's hilarious. And Bond was very much one of them that I'm, you go through the motions, and I used to be a fighter myself, so the fighting stuff comes easy. And I was working with Daniel every single evening, working on the fight moves. And he's just another actor, and we're chatting away, and he's a really personable guy and everything else like that. But there does come that point as he's just throwing a punch at my head, and I'm blocking and throwing another one. I'm like, this is James Bond. This is 007, and he's punching me in the face. That's amazing.
Living the dream.
Yeah.
When you obviously started out and you were a child and you wanted to be an actor growing up, what were the some kind of performances by actors or films that stood out that went, I want to become an actor?
There's several. I mean, it's, I always loved Robert Redford. I was a huge Robert Redford fan, and Paul Newman fan as well. Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, I fell in love with. My favourite film for so many years was a film called The Natural, which is this incredible film with Robert Redford where he plays an ageing baseball player that comes back for one last go. So I always loved those kind of movies and just never thought it was possible to be a part of that world in any possible way. I went to university and I was a boxer, and I studied sports in university, and then I stayed on and did a master's in university, and I was 23 years old and working on the door and boxing, and suddenly I realised my life had taken a turn that I didn't really want it to take and didn't know how to get back into it. So I made some inquiries and decided to get back into acting, because I acted as a kid in school plays and things like that. But the one that was always a linchpin for me was Tim Roth. I remember seeing Tim Roth in a performance on stage of Metamorphosis, and just watching what that guy did was phenomenal. And then, of course, he went on to have amazing success in Reservoir Dogs and everything else like that. And I thought, if I can do anything that's vaguely like that one day, then that will be a dream come true. And then, you know, when you look back over 14 years and see the stuff that I've been so lucky to be a part of, it's, yeah, I pinch myself.
And you mentioned the Spielberg project, and obviously you've been involved in quite a lot of British work over the years.
Yeah.
You were in Sugar Rush, which was one of my favourite shows a few years back, and of course Upstairs, Downstairs. Well.
Sugar Rush is always cause for my brother to crack up laughing, because the very first time you see my character, he's topless. The next time you see him, it's my naked bum going hammer and tongs on a lady on a kitchen table. So yeah, that's one of my finer moments right there.
That was a great show though.
Yeah, it was funny.
So have you got anything else on the horizon on this side of the pond?
Nothing on this side of the pond. I just came back and took meetings, so there's things that are percolating, and I'm hoping they're going to be announced in the next month. So yeah, a film back in the UK, so hopefully.
Working on this Spielberg one, you must be pretty excited.
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, it's just one of those that there's that sort of cliche with actors that it's just like, oh, Spielberg's going to call in a second, or Spielberg will call. And I met the director and I met the producer of the show for an audition, chatted to them, and then I was told on the Monday that they were interested, on the Tuesday that there was a few of us and there were some big names that were in there that were interested with as well. On the Wednesday, they decided that I was the main choice, but they needed the executive producer to sign off on it. And then Thursday, I got a call saying Steven Spielberg watched my tape last night and wants me specifically for the show. I was like, what? Steven Spielberg even knows who I am? That's phenomenal. And then I got a note back from the casting director saying after the first day of shooting, he'd seen the dailies, and Spielberg wrote a specific note saying Neil's doing a fantastic job.
You want that framed.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just surreal that he even knows who I am. You know? So
amazing.
Yeah, and then of course you've got that Spielberg touch on everything that's in there. It's just it's a huge, lavish, fun project that it's a real gift to be a part of, and I get a really fun curly steampunk moustache.
Nice.
Yeah, which is kind of cool.
This.
Yeah, it's fun.
Well, guys, I don't know about you, but Tom was one of the nicest guys we spoke to. What a nice chap.
Yeah, he was a really nice guy. So sort of down to earth.
Yeah.
You know, for a guy who's starring in a big hit show in the States.
Massive. Yeah. Well, to get series fee, like we said, is you don't hear that much now.
Yeah, exactly. So it was really nice to meet him, and it was interesting him telling us how he got picked for that role. You know?
Yeah. I liked his little sort of joke about the pile of English videos that casting directors must go through. They put them all in a pile, and his must have fallen in with the American ones because he has no idea how he managed to get the part, really.
Was it me, or was he one of the most English people you've ever met? Like, if you wanted anyone to sum up the perfect English accent instead of these Americans that try and do it, he's the one.
I would imagine he drinks Pimm's in the summer. That is how English Tom Meissen is.
Definitely.
But yeah, a really nice guy. Neil Jackson as well. I mean,
Neil was cool. Yeah,
he was one better. He was He was very nice. Like, on the Sunday, we got some really good time to go around the con. I think it's an hour before everyone else. We got to go around lots of stores, and suddenly this guy walked over and said, "Hey guys, wow, it's you. How's it going?"
Yeah,
you know, and
he just came up to us, didn't he, just to say hello, because we'd obviously met us the day before. Really cool guy.
Some funny stuff as well. He actually said to us, you know, "Oh, there's some alien and colonial marines cosplayers over there. You should get a picture of them." And he got his phone out and started showing us some of the pictures he had had with cosplayers throughout the day. And it's just a really funny guy, really warm, really welcome.
Yeah. And we took his advice as well. We went and found the alien and the colonial marines, and the picture's now up on our Instagram.
Also, guys, like, I don't know, because I've not read it anywhere, but I think that might be a bit of an insight today that, you know, the Spielberg stuff, I don't actually think that's very common knowledge. So interesting.
I'd not heard about this new Spielberg project, so that was a bit of breaking news, I think. So that was,
Maybe he's going to get in trouble for that. And he shouldn't have said anything. No, like, whoops. But
I really hope he doesn't now.
Is it Skip to the End exclusive?
It might not be, but let's say it is. As you guys know, I'm a bit of a British comedy nerd, so I was really, really chuffed that we got to meet a chap called Alex McQueen. He's a bit of a comedy ringer. He's one of those guys, you might not know his name, but you'd certainly know his face. Mm-hmm. For example, he played Neil's dad in The Inbetweeners, and he's also one of the politicians in The Thick of It, and he's been in other things like Hunderby and so on. So it was really cool for me to get to meet this guy who's been in a lot of stuff that I've loved. So here we are.
So we're here with Alex McQueen. Thanks a lot for joining us today,
Alex.
Not at all,
pleasure.
How are you finding the convention so far?
Fascinating. It's really, I was just saying to someone, it's really valuable to actually meet genuine members of the audience, as it were. Because if you do theatre, obviously, you get to meet people afterwards and whatever. But with TV and film things, you don't really meet the audience. So it's fascinating to see the different sort of people who've see the work you've done and see their reaction to it, and actually, sort of just see who it is that you're actually performing to. It's really useful, so fascinating.
So, as you say, in the theatre, you have that sort of instant gratification of a live audience.
Yeah, or not. I mean, it can go goes both ways, clearly. So, it's just been really useful and a real pleasure. Yeah,
fantastic. So, are you working on anything at the minute that we can keep an eye out for?
Yeah, well, I mean, in Cinderella, which will come out in a week's time, that's the new Disney Kenneth Branagh film. Yeah. So, and then we're shooting Hunderby at the moment, which is a comedy for Sky Atlantic. And then after that, I'm doing a comedy with an actor called Johnny Sweet, who actually knows the Inbetweeners boys. He was very friendly with them at university. So, yeah, there's bits and pieces on the horizon. So we'll see where it leads.
Talking about the Inbetweeners, I can imagine being on set filming. How was that experience? Is it impossible to keep a straight face for all day?
Well, it's quite. We do a lot of takes and there's a lot of coverage on it. So, actually, it can be quite sort of, not repetitive exactly, but it's not as always. The first take is funny and we all laugh at that, but by the time you're doing the 10th or 15th, you forget that it's funny, and you're really just hoping to remember the line or remember the instructions you're being given. So it's a combination of the first couple of takes, this is funny, and then, as I say, by the later ones, you've forgotten that it's a comedy at all. So
And what was it like working with Peter Capaldi?
Oh, fabulous. I mean, great fun, because he's such a nice guy and so very different to the parts he plays.
Exactly.
It's really interesting to see his behaviour on set and off set. So he's a great chap, and I saw him just before Christmas. We went out for lunch, so it was really nice to see him, because he's obviously very busy and tied up with the Doctor Who franchise. So
excellent.
I've got to say, I was incredibly jealous when he said he got to have dinner with Peter Capaldi.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So casually, just went for dinner with him.
Just went for dinner with him. Because obviously to people these days he's known as Doctor Who, but to me he will always be Malcolm Tucker from The Thick of It. I would love just to have dinner with him and ask him to swear at me. That would be marvellous. I could die a happy man then.
That's one of my little things on my list. I'm going to make that happen for you one day.
Thanks, man.
It's all right.
What, you're going to take Ben to dinner and swear at him?
Cheers. How would that be different to any other dinner we've had?
But no, very cool to speak to Alexander McQueen there, and obviously talking us through the in-between of stuff as well. And I imagine, like you said, it would be funny first time, second time, but after about 20 takes, you just want to get the job done.
Yeah, yeah.
But he was really, a really pleasant chap as well.
Yeah, just talking to him, it still sounded like, I was looking at him like, you're just Neil's dad, it's amazing. And to be honest, he's hilarious in The Inbetweeners.
He is.
If anyone ever listens to these podcasts before today, they'll know I'm an absolute mad fan on any cheesy old horrors that should be banned. Thanks to our good friends at Arrows, they bring them back, they get these restored. They had a stall again at the Comic-Con, and, well, I love these guys, so I always go straight over there, buy some Blu-rays, buy DVDs, and see what those guys are up to. Lads, it was cool.
Yeah, it was cool. What was the one that you bought this time?
The Incredible Melting Man.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah, they are cool guys. We spoke to them at Birmingham last time in November, and, mm-hmm. and we actually had an interview with Ewan on there. He's become quite a good friend of the podcast, actually, now. But, yeah, they're always very welcoming, always very friendly people.
It's amazing as well to see a company like that grow. So they've recently gone out to America and they're starting to release titles over there. It was crowdfunded to get all the actual whole process started. And they always feel like it's a homegrown thing. You always feel like, you know, the members of staff that are running it and doing the production and the web team and everything are all there selling the stuff as well. It's all hands-on. And I love them. I really do. They're great guys.
Yeah, and one of the things I was quite excited by, because as you know, I'm not really into my horror, but I saw that they're going to be releasing the Hellraiser series.
Yeah.
And I actually do like the Hellraiser series. I think they're pretty cool. I like Pinhead.
Yeah, big time. The big title they were promoting this time was the classic Rollerball. Now, I have reviewed that on our site, skiptheend.co.uk. It's an unbelievable film, an absolute classic, and they were promoting that because that's just come out this week on Blu-ray. And what the best part was is they had Paul Shipper out there. He actually did the original artwork, but he was actually at the con, so we got to talk to him. We got to see some of his other prints, which I didn't even know he did. He did some of the Guardians of the Galaxy, Jaws, Raiders of the Lost Ark. He's done lots of different takes on famous artworks, and even Bad Milo, which is a recent horror movie, it was his design that got used as the actual theatre, DVD, cinema, everything. Brilliant artist. And guys, I think at one point I walked off for a minute and turned around, he had his phone out to you two, showing you some of his...
Yeah, he was showing us things like he's done work for official X-Files comics, he's done the front covers, and something that he was showing me and Adam was that he was commissioned by HBO to do a Game of Thrones calendar. And I was blown away by this. I was like, oh, where can I buy that? And it was like, no, it was for staff members only. I was like, oh, gutted.
Yeah, I think you said it was staff members, family, and then a few select clients of HBO as well. I mean, that's crazy. Imagine being a select client that you get something like that from HBO.
Mm.
Guys, I think it's been about 4 minutes since we've given something away. Maybe a bit longer.
What are you suggesting?
Competition time.
You're joking. What?
I've just built up Rollerball quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
You have?
It's out there to go and buy. Just before that, if you go into any shop that's out there, nearly said one then, and you went to buy this, it would not be signed, would it, by Paul Shipper?
No.
I want to give a couple of people out there the chance to own this.
A couple?
The brand new Blu-ray, beautiful artwork by Paul himself, but he's actually hand-signed it in gold, beautiful ink.
Are you saying we've got two of these?
Not just one, two.
Yikes. Both signed?
Both.
Holy moly.
Right, let's think of a question. Rollerball, what a classic film.
Yeah.
There's a standout acting performance who plays the part of Jonathan E. Who is that? Don't answer that now, boys, because that will ruin it. But if you let us know, go on Twitter at STTE Podcast, go on Facebook, go on Instagram if you want, you know, take a photo of a little piece of paper, do whatever, but email us. Go on skiptheend.co.uk. There's a little form on there how to contact us. Just let us know who played it.
Or drop us an email at podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk.
Do whatever, just let us know, and we'll announce the winners on our own podcast, which is out in a couple of weeks.
You know what, Mark? We here at Skip to the End, we love giving things away. So you've got me feeling charitable now. We also picked up a T-shirt from Arrow of the film The Voices. So, Ben, can you think of a question?
Well, to give this T-shirt away?
Yeah.
How about this? Who plays the lead male actor in The Voices?
Yeah, that's a good one.
And I would go and see that film because it's on at the cinema right now.
Yeah, it looks great as well.
Yeah, I'm going to go and see it.
Mm-hmm.
Want to come, boys?
Yeah.
Cool,
yeah.
Let's go.
One of the great guests as well this year was Chris Gorham. who's very well known for playing roles as Augie in Covert Affairs. He was also in Jake 2.0, and he had a role in the comedy series Ugly Betty as well. So here's what he had to say.
How are you finding the MCM Birmingham Comic Con so far?
It's great. There's a ton of people here. There's lots of people dressed up in amazing costumes. It's very exciting.
Yeah. And is this your first time at a con in the UK?
It's my first time at a con, period. I mean, other than we did Comic Con 1 year to promote Covert Affairs, but that's it.
So what has the experience been like for you then this first time?
Oh, it's been great. Everyone's really nice. It's an exciting group of people to be around there. You know, everybody's happy to see you, and so it's been fantastic.
Okay. And what have you found the reception to the show Covert Affairs been like to the UK crowd?
Oh, it's been overwhelmingly positive. We've had a lot of fans of the show. A lot of people really hungry to see season 5 because I guess it hasn't aired over here yet. So it's been difficult not to kind of spoil the ending. You know, but it's been good.
Oh, that's great. So are you working on any other projects at the moment?
Yeah, I'm just about to start production on a film called Poe. It's an indie film about a newly widowed father raising his 9-year-old autistic son.
Oh, wow. Sounds like quite a heavy piece.
Yeah, it is. It's very emotional. It's a very sweet script. It's a really lovely little film.
And what's your kind of preference as an actor? Because that obviously seems like quite a heavy piece compared to something like Covert Affairs, which can be fairly light. And then going back to your time in Ugly Betty, which obviously was a comedy. What do you prefer to work in?
Well, I just love variety. It's really nice. I've been very lucky to be able to mix things up kind of year to year. Playing Augie on Covert Affairs was the longest that I'd done one role, period, doing 5 seasons. There's an interesting kind of freedom in that because you get to explore all kinds of different aspects of the character when you do it for that long. But I do like mixing it up. I played a serial killer right before Augie, and it's been very different.
And something else that I know that you've done a bit of is that you've played the Flash in a couple of the the DC animated films.
Yeah, exactly.
And so how did you fall into that, into the kind of voice acting world?
No, you know, that's just something that pops in every once in a while. One of those roles comes along. Mm-hmm. The Flash was just an offer that came through a few years ago. It worked out in the first film, and the second one, The Age of Atlantis, just came out in January.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll continue doing those.
Yeah, they're both really good films.
Yeah, they're good, right? I didn't know anything about them when I started, and I was so impressed with the first one. And Age of Atlantis again is also really a solid movie.
Yeah, it's one of those things. DC have kind of got this animated film run going now.
Yeah.
So hopefully, hope you get a bit more work as the Flash then.
Yeah, yeah.
Was the Flash a character you were familiar with before this?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I was a big Justice League fan of the original cartoon when I was a kid. So my only gripe about the new movies is that they never put Flash on the poster, which, I'm starting to take personally.
I'm sure it'll be on the next one.
So with yourself growing up, when was it you discovered that you really wanted to become an actor? What was it you were watching, or where were you at the stage of your life where you thought, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life?
You know, I started performing in elementary school, just, in school plays and things like that. Sometime around fourth grade, like when I was 10, I think I decided that this is what I wanted to do. That being said, I didn't know anything about the reality of the business. I grew up in Fresno, California. It was about 4 hours north of L.A., and I didn't have any family in the business or anything. I just felt drawn to that and started pursuing it. I ended up going to an arts high school and then studied theater in college and started working after I graduated college.
Was there an actor out there that you inspired to be like? Is there someone that you always watch their work and
feel? Yeah, well, my favorite actor growing up actually was Michael Keaton, so I feel like a particular sense of I guess justification or what's the word I'm looking for? I just feel vindicated that, he was nominated for an Oscar this year. It was like, see, I told you.
Yeah,
he's brilliant.
It was so good to see him back on the screen as
it
well.
It is.
So
he's,
proud.
And he's one of those guys who, he's just so much fun to watch.
Yeah.
Like, he's not necessarily like a Daniel Day-Lewis who kind of just vanishes inside each of these characters. Yeah. You always know you're watching Michael Keaton. But it's the same thing that I love about Leonardo DiCaprio and guys like him. Like, you always know you're watching that guy. Like, Jack Nicklaus, same thing. You always know you're watching Jack, but they're so much fun to watch. Which is kind of the thing that I adore about him.
That's what I loved about Birdman. It was like, it's been that long since he's been in the limelight.
Yeah.
It was such a refreshing, like, here he is, and this is everything that you've ever missed about him in an hour and a half.
Yeah, exactly. It's great. My wife ran into him at some event years ago, and she had him sign a napkin for me, so I've got his signature up on my wall, yeah.
So you've obviously done a lot of different roles over your career. Mm. Been in different things, as Ben said, so you've got a heavy piece coming up, you've been in a lot of different sort of lighter pieces, comedy pieces as well.
Yeah.
Is there any role that you would really like to take on?
Oh boy, I don't know. It's kind of an impossible question. There's because you never know when it's going to hit, you know? Like this, like when I read this script of this movie that I'm doing, you know, it just felt like a great fit, you know? It was like, oh, I really, like, I get this story and I get this guy and what he's going through. And it's interesting. It's interesting. We'll see how the movie turns out, you know? I mean, there's a long road to go on this movie, but I hope that it makes people actually a little uncomfortable in watching it, but then hits very close to home, because and through a lot of the film, like, you really see how hard a time this dad has trying to be a good father, you know, to his son when he feels so lost himself, you know. And it kind of, I think, shows how parents don't have all the answers, you know, all the time. And I think from the perspective of the kids, you always feel like your parents know everything, you know, and this really shows how untrue that is.
The harsh reality of them not knowing everything.
Yeah, exactly. And struggling, you know, and trying and not always succeeding. Sometimes really failing to be a great dad.
See, I want to see this now. Yeah, that sounds interesting. And when can we expect to see this?
I don't know. We're going to Lens the middle of April. So we'll finish shooting it in May. And then, you know, I assume they're going to try and get it ready for the festivals at the end of the year, January. So, you know, hopefully beginning of next year.
Yeah, another cool guy. I know we sound like we're repeating ourselves. Oh, this guy was great, that guy was great. But it's true. All the guests that we've met at these cons have just been so, so lovely, haven't they?
Yeah, and we don't mean to suggest that at other cons we've met guests that haven't been, because, you know, they have been. But yeah, these guys, they were just so friendly and just seemed genuinely happy to be speaking to us.
And just talking generally, you know, it must be a difficult thing to have to contend with interview after interview and press person after press person, and often being asked the same questions over and over again. So to do it with grace and humour, like Chris did,
I think that might be as well that we ask better questions, and it's a pleasure to speak to
there
us.
Is that, you know, of course, there is that.
I thought that's what you're going to say. They speak to people, ask the same questions, and then we come along, and it's all like, "Hey!"
It's because I was trying to big up Chris, not big up ourselves.
Oh, okay. We're good, and Chris is
and
good.
Chris is also good.
So what a perfect combo.
No, it was cool to speak to him. It was great hearing some of the stuff he had to say as well, especially about his projects coming up. It seems like a very interesting artistic piece as well.
Yeah, Poe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to check that out.
Yeah. We also got to meet a convention regular, Colm Meaney, who has been around the acting game for a long, long time. He's starred in things like Star Trek, so he's been to quite a few Star Trek conventions. And he's also now starring in AMC's Hell on Wheels, which is a successful cable show over in the States.
Don't also forget Con Air, one of the best films ever made.
He was also in Con Air, yeah. Brilliant.
Partridge.
And Alan Partridge, yeah.
So we're here with Colm Meaney, star of film and television, here promoting Hell on Wheels. So thanks a lot for joining us.
Pleasure, good to be here.
I imagine that as someone who's been a large part of the Star Trek franchises over the years, Comic-Cons aren't new to you.
No, I've done quite, well, not that many, but over the years, yeah, I've done my share of particularly Star Trek conventions, you know. And they're usually just exclusively Star Trek, but it's interesting to come to the more general Comic-Con ones as well.
And how do you find the people who come and attend these things and come to meet? How do you find the way they react to you?
The audience today for the question answer was lovely. So I had some great, very interesting questions. We talked about theatre. We talked about, you know, some of the films I've made over the years and directors I've worked with. Very knowledgeable.
And what is your great love, if you could do anything now? Film, TV, theatre? Which do you always prefer to do?
Acting, so, you know, whether it's film or television, even radio acting I enjoy, you know. So
okay.
Acting on the set, obviously, recently in the successful film for Alan Partridge, how was that experience? It must be a really fun day at work, surely, to be working with Steve Coogan. And
yeah, well, we get a lot of improvisation, you know, which is different to the way one usually works, you know. It's very interesting, and the way the method of working has changed because of the digital camera and all that as well. That you can, you know, I mean, before you'd rehearse, nail it down, and you know you'd know what you're doing before you roll film. Now you can just roll endless amounts of film and keep screwing around with it. You know?
Yeah, going on the whole process. Mm. A massive fan.
It's actually changed the acting process in filmmaking. And it's very interesting because there's a big debate about the technical quality of digital, you know, whether it was as good as film, and people weren't using it until it was as good as film. But nobody bothered to talk about what it would do to the process of acting. Like what we did was we would rehearse, you know, then you rehearse with the camera crew. Usually you worked with one camera. And only in rare action scenes would you put in two or three cameras. Now we're constantly using three cameras. We don't really rehearse anymore. It's completely destroyed our process as actors.
It must be completely different considering 20 years ago you were doing films that were, like you said.
It's quite dreadful.
Yeah.
It's destroyed the process.
Do you think it's going to get worse?
It's as bad as it can get.
And let's hopefully finish on a positive note. We've heard that Hell on Wheels has been renewed for a final season. So what can fans expect from the sort of the wrapping up of the story?
I think we're finally going to meet the guys coming from the west, the opposition, as it were, the Southern Pacific Railroad guys will come, and we will meet. And obviously, there's going to be a lot of competition and stuff between us. But rumor has it that Bohannon has gone over to those guys, so I'll have to deal with him when I get back, won't I?
I was fascinated by what Colin was saying about how digital filming has changed the game completely for actors. When he first started talking about that, I thought he was going to say that it was a blessing for actors that, you know, that they could do as many takes as they liked and not have to worry about running out of film or anything like that. But he seemed to find it as a negative on his acting process.
Which is interesting. I kind of see where he's coming from, because he's talk about obviously how they rehearsed things to death basically back in the day before they went out and actually then performed in front of the camera. But it just seems like now maybe they get a small amount of rehearsal time, then they just shove the cameras on you and that's that.
Yeah.
Whatever they get's good.
I think that's one of the differences that we got to kind of find out today. A lot of the people we spoke to are young upcoming actors, you know, the young guys from Walking Dead, the same guys from Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah.
But this guy's kind of been there and done that 20 years ago. So he's been there and seen the transition of the way the technology's caught on. And, you know, it's quite scary to think, where will it go? You know, is it going to get worse and worse? Is there going to be 30 cameras for every take and this and that? And, you know, it's nice to see some kind of old school actor that's come along and said, I preferred it the way it was. It used to just work and make me want to deliver the finest performance instead of, well, stop the cameras, let's go again.
It's interesting me now for, you know, when we go to future cons and get to meet sort of old hands like him. I want to delve into that with some more people and see what their views are.
Yeah.
See what some of the other older actors think of that.
I think maybe it's the director's preference as well. I think for a comedy series, I think we asked about working with Steve Coogan, I think, when he actually said it. So for a comedy kind of film or show, I imagine they do keep the camera rolling, because any improv you get, they might think, oh, that's great, let's use that.
Yeah.
But with a drama series, I wonder if they are more, I guess, structured in the way they go, rehearsal.
Tightly scripted.
Yeah, rehearsal time there. We don't just keep the camera rolling on you.
Interesting. So we now, basically, whenever we go to a future con, the oldest person we get to interview, we're asking you that.
Yeah, so prepare your answers wisely. One of the key features that we perform on all of our podcasts, not just our MCM podcast, but also our regular ones that you can find out there on Podomatic and iTunes, we always do a top three. So what we like to do on our con episodes is talk about our top three things of the con. So Adam, start us off.
I'll start with number three, Comic Village. I regularly talk about it. I like Comic Village. At the last one, we managed to speak to Neil Gibson at Telford. He talks us through Twisted Dark. Didn't get a chance to catch up with him, unfortunately, this time. But we did walk past Steve Penfold, who is the artist for a comic called Moon. Now, I must confess, it's a comic I didn't really know anything about before walking past it, but I severely regret not buying an issue now.
Yeah.
Because the sales pitch he gave us was incredible. It's all a story about the moon in the sky coming down at night and being a cop, basically. It's like a buddy cop drama of a comic. So it sounded amazing. It was a great pitch, Steve, and I really wish I kind of bought that now.
It was a fantastic pitch, wasn't it? It was so, so well rehearsed and perfectly delivered.
Yeah, I think it was unlucky that we were walking by his press at the time. Otherwise, I think he might have got a few sales with that.
I think when he saw our press badges, he was like, oh, I've just wasted time doing that then.
Well, he's got himself on here, so he's done all right.
Yeah.
I was absolutely loving all the merch. I think I mentioned this on previous podcasts that we've done for MCM, but I always tell myself I'm not going to spend much money. I try and limit myself. Then there's the cash point, and then it's every piece of merch I want suddenly saying, buy me, you know, and there I am walking around the original posters for some of the best films ever made, like Gremlins and Jaws and anything else that's made.
What decade were they made?
And
were they 70s?
Say again?
Well, in the 70s.
70s and 80s, yeah. You know,
80s.
Me. Yeah. So just basically buying everything. I can never come home without anything. So I've got Blu-rays, I've got DVDs, I've got some pyjamas. I've got loads of stuff. So I just love it. And I'm going to keep on buying stuff and trying to convince myself that I don't need to, but sod it.
And we did it. We fell in the same trap as well, didn't we, Adam? But, both of us, despite being grown men, both came away with Pokemon-based clothing.
I can't help it. It's a weakness, and you walk around and you think, I won't buy anything this time, it's fine. And then you see it and you're like, I want that, I have to have that, I need that. I think one of my favourite moments of that was with Ben was looking for a present for his little brother and realised that if he bought a Snorlax jumper, he'd actually managed to get a free poster for his brother. So he bought the Snorlax jumper for himself.
Yeah, 25 quid well spent. My third choice, I will go with meeting Neil Jackson. I thought he was a brilliant interviewer, interviewee, I should say, and just a very cool dude. And as we mentioned, you know, the fact that he just sort of came up to us on the floor afterwards the next day to say hello, I just think he was a real down-to-earth, real good guy. And I like to see people, when they come to the cons, not seeing them as work, but getting out there and enjoying them themselves as an event. And that's clearly what Neil was doing. He was out on the floor, taking photos with cosplayers, checking out some of the stalls, enjoying the event for what it was. And, you know, you've got to love him for that.
Massively.
Oh yeah, great guy. We've talked about him earlier in the cast, and I have nothing really to add to it. He's a great guy. So my number two is going to be Chris Gorham.
Yeah,
another fantastic interview we did over the course. And again, we've spoken about it before, but he was just a really likable guy. He was really warm and friendly when being interviewed. And I think we actually managed to miss him in the press room at one point, and We caught up with him a bit later on, and he said, yeah, that's fine, I'll do an interview, don't worry, even though he'd already done his press duties for the day. He came back, I think he was having lunch, he came back after his lunch, sat down with us and gave us 5-10 minutes, and it was great.
It was superb.
For me, my second one will be definitely meeting Paul Shipper. I didn't even know he was going to be there, so it was a complete surprise. I love some of the artwork he's done for Arrow and also Scream Factory in America, and I actually will confess I didn't know he did the re-release of the box set for Halloween. So to then see this big poster of it and being like, oh my God, you're the guy that's drawn one of my favourite pieces of artwork was just stunning. So to meet him, go through his phone and see what he's got coming out, and just, it was amazing. I could have talked to him for hours.
Yeah.
You must have been pretty annoyed that you didn't bring some of your DVDs and Blu-rays with you.
That's next time he's there. I'm going to be there with a massive stack of them.
My second choice was the cosplay. You know, we've been to a few of these cons now, and you always, always see great cosplay. But some of the costumes this time were just unbelievable. There was a chap who was dressed as, I think he was some sort of soldier from, was it Warhammer?
Yeah.
And this, it's up on our Instagram, you can take a look at that. And this costume had to be, what, nine feet tall? If it was, you know, I don't know how he was, I don't know how many, there might have been more people in it than what, there might have been about 4 people in it, for all I know.
Yeah.
It was huge. And you can check out our Instagram, which is...
Skip to the End Podcast.
And on there you'll see about, I think, 30, 40 pictures of different cosplayers that we've seen over the period of time, and there's some really phenomenal ones.
Yeah, some of it's great. We actually snapped a picture of a guy who's dressed as someone from Borderlands as well, looking really cool. And he gave us a business card afterwards, actually, which was really cool. It's like he's trying to become kind of a professional cosplayer, which, best of luck to him because his outfit was great.
One of my favourite was Luigi. Mario Kart, he actually had like a kid's go-kart driving around the whole event with these little green balloons attached, and you know, I'm going to put it on Instagram again after this episode because people need to see how much work this guy spent on his costume. It was phenomenal.
Yeah.
They all do. I mean, they almost spend so much time and effort and care into these outfits, and they look great.
And one of the things we're actually doing is running a bit of a cosplay competition. So all the people that we took pictures of and are now up on our Instagram, we're going to decide which one we think was the best, and we're going to send them a prize. But we'd actually quite like your help with that. So if you can get onto our Twitter and our Instagram, like the pictures that you think are the best, the costumes that are the best, send us a tweet telling us which one you think is best, drop us an email, tell us what's best, and then we'll take that all under advisement. We'll come to a decision on who the best cosplay of the con was, and we'll send them something in the post.
Do you know what? I want to send them a Skip to the End t-shirt and a couple of DVDs. Let's give them something great.
Yeah, let's do that.
So yeah, my number one, and to be honest, it's only ever going to be one thing, Quentin Flynn.
Yeah.
I mentioned earlier how he was one of the guys that for sure I wanted to meet when I was there. I've been playing games that he's been voicing in since I was about 13 years old. Just amazing to meet him. And it's one of those ones where I met him, I spoke to him, and not only did he live up to what I wanted him to be, he was so funny. He was so genuine as well, mm-hmm. which, sometimes you don't get. Luckily, since we've been interviewing, we've got that a lot. But he was just, the impressions he was giving us, the chat that we even got off the record as well,
yeah,
was just funny, side-splittingly funny.
Just a really cool guy, and it was amusing to me how concerned he was for us. Like there was a bit of background noise when we were interviewing him, and he was really concerned to make sure that we got good audio. You know, like, it's okay, it's fine. But he was just that kind of guy that he wanted it to be good, and yeah, it was a lot of fun to talk to.
For me, my number one, I can't not have it, is basically Tyler and Christian from Walking Dead.
Yeah.
It's one of my favourite TV shows of the last 5 years. I think it's a lot of anyone's favourite TV. Mm-hmm. It's still going strong now. Like we said, the episode that led up to this was spot on. So to actually then see them in the flesh a week later, alive and well, which was good,
yeah,
was amazing. And, you know, I'm going to say it, lads. Christian is probably the most, after my wife, of course, the most gorgeous girl I think I've ever seen.
Very beautiful woman.
Yeah.
Yeah,
very absolutely attractive. Stunning. If you want to look at photos of us meeting the guys from Walking Dead, then just get on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter, because we've got some really cool shots. And I think you picked up on earlier, they've flown into the UK about 3 hours before this. I would want to go straight to bed, but yeah, they stood and signed for 5-6 hours straight, and I didn't see the queue go down, and they were just loving it, meeting all the fans, photographs, and it just makes you realise how much work and effort these celebrities put in, and fair play to them. And I just want to go home now and watch The New Walking Dead. But yeah, amazing guys and lovely to meet them.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. My number one was seeing Warwick Davis. Warwick was there attending a special birthday celebration for a group of cosplayers called UK Garrison, which have been around for 15 years doing Star Wars-based cosplay. And they managed to get Warwick to come along and cut their cake. And obviously Warwick was in Return of the Jedi, so this was a big deal for them. So that happened at the con. And sadly, we didn't get to interview Warwick because he had to rush off early. But we did get to see him at a roundabout. And, you know, we just mentioned there The Walking Dead, the queue for their signing was huge. The queue for Warwick, of all the conventions we've been to, it was the busiest, longest queue I've seen. And at no point did it relent. It never got shorter. You know, other people, other queues, when the celeb goes off for their dinner, people tend to drift away from the queue and come back after dinner. They didn't. This massive queue just stayed waiting for Warwick to come back. People absolutely go nuts for him.
He's an idol.
Yeah.
You know, when you think about it, he was in Star Wars, so everyone there loves Star Wars, and they're getting to meet Warwick in the flesh. It's
exactly.
Unbelievable. Everyone that loves Ricky Gervais, his work recently, he's on the top of his game, and I'm sure in the next few weeks we're going to find out that, I might be wrong, but he's going to be in episode 7, and we're all going to be like, awesome.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. It's because he's done so much different stuff. He has cross-generational appeal. People of our age and older are going to love him because he was, you know, Wicket, the Ewok in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
Kids are going to love him because he was in Harry Potter.
Yeah.
And then comedy fans are going to love him because he was in Life's Too Short. So, you know, he does. And people, comedy fans are going to like him because he worked with Cole Pilkington on Idiot Abroad. So he has got that cross appeal against all genres and all ages, and people genuinely love him. And it was cool to see him.
And the Leprechaun films, remember? He did like 7 or 8 different Leprechaun films, which for me, who loves the 99p terrible DVDs of horror, he's an idol.
Yeah.
And of course, I think not this season gone, but the one before, he also had an episode of BBC's Jewel in the Crown, Doctor Who.
Ah, so he did.
He's been there and done it all.
Well, I think it's been a really cool con, but do you know what? we've been very generous today, but I think we've got more in us.
More prizes? I'm sure we're out now, surely.
Nah, we've got some more to give. Tell them about it, Mark.
I was amazed by some of the cinema posters that are up on the walls and advertising all these new releases that are coming out. And now there was Jupiter Ascending artwork in kind of like a Mondo-style print, which was looking unbelievable. There was some really, really cool prints. So I went straight over and I was like, can I have one of these, please, to give away on our podcast? And fair play to the guys at Cineworld.
Yeah.
They were like, yeah, go for it. So we've got one of those to give away. But also, you know, one wouldn't be enough. There's a big bundle of lots of the latest films. So we've got, like, The Boy Next Door. We've got...
Kill the Messenger.
You name it, we're going to put it in the tube and send it to you. So let's think of a question.
So as you've mentioned there, we've got a really cool Jupiter Ascending poster. How about this as the quiz question? Who directed the film Jupiter Ascending?
It's a very cool poster. Can I enter this?
No.
Oh.
Shame. So if you want to enter this, you can go on Twitter at STTE Podcast. You can email us, podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk, or you can Facebook us, facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast.
Perfect. Well, remember, Ben, I like
I know.
It.
I never remember the Facebook. I'm amazed.
Well done.
And as I said before, there are so many ways to get in touch with us. There is no excuse for not entering this if you want to win.
Get involved. So that brings us to the end of yet another MCM Comic-Con podcast special. It's been a good podcast and it was a hell of a good show.
I absolutely loved the whole weekend and each time I'm meeting more and more people. The cosplay seems to be getting completely, unbelievably better and I just want to go to more of these.
Luckily, we're gonna.
When are we going?
The next one that we're going to attend will be the London Comic-Con in May, a 3-day event.
Oh my lord, an extra day?
Yup.
I can't wait. I actually can't. I mean, I love these cons. They're always brilliant. You've got great people there, not just the guests, but the actual, you know, people that attend as well.
Yeah.
Everyone's really friendly. Everyone's really nice. It's just a great atmosphere, so I can't wait for London.
Everybody loves everyone. Everyone's wanting to take photos of each other, and it's just such a good vibe.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We wanted to give a bit of a shout-out to the guys over at MCM who help us out, so I wanted to say thank you to Gary, Brian, Charlie and Josh. Thanks a lot for all your help.
You are legends.
So thanks a lot for listening. Of course, you can check out episodes of our normal podcast over at Podomatic or at iTunes. We have got a brand new episode coming out next Friday, so please do check that out. You can also check out our website, skiptotheend.co.uk, which we update regularly with news, features, reviews, all sorts. So thanks a lot, guys.